dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas, and Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for an intelligence briefing on what I think of as the war for the free world. In the very front lines of that war, I'm very pleased to say, is our first guest. He is Doug Lamborn, United States Congressman from the 5th District of Colorado. He is a Republican member of the House, serves on its Armed Services Committee, including its Subcommittee on Strategic Forces and Readiness. He is also a senior member of the House Committee on Natural Resources. He serves as the chairman of its Subcommittee on Energy and Mineral Resources. Doug Lamborn, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio.
Always good to talk with you, Frank.
Well, congratulations are in order for an absolutely sensational bit of legislative, accomplishment last week. You and your colleague, Senator Ted Cruz in the Senate, pulled off one of the great hat tricks on Capitol Hill these days, which is not only to get legislation passed in both chambers, but to get it passed unanimously. Tell us what the legislation was and explain, if you can, how it managed to be approved without a single objection from either party in either house.
Well, Frank, the issue was so strong, no one could raise any objections. No one in Congress wanted to say, hey, Iran can send an ambassador to our shores, give him diplomatic immunity, no less, and yet this person was involved with the hostage takeover in 1979 in Tehran, where they held our people for 444 days. No one could object to that. So Ted in the Senate, me in the House, got it through unanimously. What is perplexing to me, Frank, is how it could be sitting on the president's desk and him not having signed it yet.
Yeah, this is a little puzzling. The president's spokesman has said that they're not going to issue a visa to this this former hostage taker. That is just such an affront that the Iranians would send him as their representative, but also I think a pretty powerful signal as to how immoderate this so-called moderate Rouhani character actually is and why doing deals with him is a fool's errand, it seems to me. But what would possibly justify the president not signing this legislation if he believes that this man should not be given a visa as well?
Only two things can come to my mind, Frank. One is he still wants to appease the Iranians in a mistaken view that appeasing them will bring them closer to a culmination of these negotiations on the nuclear weapons. I reject that because they understand force and strength. They view appeasement as weakness. The only other thing I can think of, Frank, is he's upset at Congress because we called him on this. We didn't trust him. Actually, we aren't giving him power to do it, but he likes to take the lead in everything and doesn't like to play second fiddle, so to speak. So maybe that's what's going on. I don't know what's going on in his mind, though.
There is a concern that he might, through a mechanism known as the pocket veto, simply allow this legislation to die without his actually vetoing it formally or signing it into law. What would you and Senator Cruz do in that circumstance, Congressman Doug Lamborn?
Frank, if he were to actively, expressly veto it or somehow let it die, and I'm not an expert on whether it would become law or die if he took no action, but if somehow it did not become law, we would turn around and seek to override his veto.
Well, in this case, with every single member of the House and Senate on board, that should be no heavy lift. But we appreciate your leadership on this, Doug Lamborn, and the fact that this would apply not simply, we should be clear, to this particular terrorist diplomat, but to any others. And all the more reason why this kind of enabling legislation should be something the president embraces and makes part of his quiver in dealing with adversaries, not just the Iranians, but others as well. Congressman, since we've got you, let me ask you about a couple of other things quickly, if I may. You are, as I said, a member of the House Armed Services Committee and have been very much in front of the warnings that that committee and others on the Hill have been producing from time to time, at least, about the hollowing out of our military. And I just wondered, do you believe that what we're seeing from Vladimir Putin at the moment, as he seeks to intimidate and coerce and perhaps simply take over more of Ukraine, if not all of it, and perhaps other places besides, is at least in part a function of the feeling that he now has that he can act with impunity because of the weakness of the United States?
I don't know if it's so much he views our military as having weakened, although that we are on that trajectory, Frank, or that he views our president as being feckless and irresolute. I think that he views Barack Obama as someone who does not want to engage, who is not able to take strength and force. Look what happened with Syria and the red line that was crossed and nothing was done of substance. So I think he views him as a weak leader. So it's really more a commentary on Barack Obama than it is on our military.
Well, I hope you're right. I'm afraid it may be a combination of the two, and that hollowing out is, as you know, going on apace. And unfortunately, it's almost certainly going to create problems for us, if not at this moment, in the future of this
kind. It will. Yes.
Speaking of the military, Doug Lamborn, you have been a leader on trying to protect the religious freedoms of our military personnel. They are under assault, notably out in your part of the world. The U.S. Air Force Academy has been subjecting its young airmen to an unbelievable series of restrictions and other prohibitions, really, on expression of their religious sentiments. What is up with all of that, and what are you trying to do to remedy the situation?
Frank, that's a great question. The Air Force in particular seems to be overly restrictive on how people can express their religious views, including chaplains, cadets, or active duty airmen. So they have a regulation, Frank, that seems to tilt in favor of controlling expression because they don't want to be viewed as establishing a religion, but that has to be balanced by free expression. So we think that their regulations are tighter and more restricted than the other three branches, and we're going after their regulation. And I've written letters with over 20 co-sponsors, a letter just the other day to Secretary James saying, look, this regulation has got to go. On the Academy whiteboard incident here in Colorado Springs, where my district is, we're having meetings where I've written a letter to put them on record. They can't ignore that. We are even looking at things to put in the National Defense Authorization Act, the NDAA, which is coming up soon.
Well, we wish you well on all of this. It's a fundamental right of those who protect all of our fundamental rights, and it is important that the Air Force Academy and others in that service, and for that matter, the military more generally, not allow those who would restrict our freedom of religion and religious expression to deny that very, very important freedom to our military personnel. Congressman Doug Lamborn, lastly, yesterday, as you know, was the first anniversary of an attack on an important part of our electric grid out in California, Northern California. You are, as I mentioned, the chairman of the Energy and Mineral Resources Committee of the Natural Resources Subcommittee. Talk a little bit, if you would, about the vulnerability of our grid and how important it is that we ensure it is made more resilient.
Frank, the electrical grid is a national security issue. Whether we're talking about a solar flare or active interference by an adversary through cyber or physical attack, we have to make sure that this vital infrastructure of our country is protected and defended. So I know I want to work with the Homeland Security Committee and other folks. We should have as much redundancy as possible. The war on coal that this administration is doing makes us more vulnerable because they're actively seeking to shut down coal plants. They always do it in the name of something else. They don't want to admit that they're after hydrocarbons. And after coal, Frank, later it's going to be oil, then gas.
And nuclear power is in the mix as well. Congressman Doug Lamborn, so much more to talk with you about. I hope we'll have a chance to do so in the near future. In the meantime, thank you for the indispensable work you're doing in the United States Congress. Keep it up. I hope that you'll come back to us again very soon.
Listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
On August 2nd, 2006, Mark Allen Lee became the first Navy SEAL to lose his life in Iraq.
Debbie Lee became a Gold Star mom that day.
And it started a lifelong mission of her own. In Mark's honor, Debbie founded America's Mighty Warriors,
dedicated to supporting the troops and their families.
AMW educates the public through speaking engagements, rallies, and events to raise awareness and appreciation of our military.
AMW advocates for the troops.
Funding, rules of engagement, benefits. AMW is committed to being a voice for justice for our troops. AMW serves Gold Star families, retreats, concerts, special events.
Good things to remind the families they're not forgotten.
America's Mighty Warriors.
Nonprofit.
Dedicated to the troops and their families.
Donations are tax deductible.
Log on to americasmightywarriors.org.
Find out how you can help.
The best of America deserves our best. Log on today.
americasmightywarriors.org.
Hey, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
I'm Robert Muse, co-founder and senior counsel of the American Freedom Law Center, our nation's premier public interest law firm fighting for your faith and freedom in courtrooms across America. Make no mistake, we live in a pivotal time. Secular progressives such as Barack Obama and his surrogates are zealously sweeping religion from the public square, foisting Sharia law and other harmful international precedents into our courts and constitution, assaulting the traditional family, and weakening our national defense by, among other things, undermining the strength of our military through social engineering and political correctness. But I can assure you that the American Freedom Law Center is aggressively engaging our nation's enemies with offensive lawfare to defend our fundamental rights and to fight stealth jihad in all of its forms, including the civilization jihad being waged by Muslim Brotherhood front groups operating here in the U.S. Indeed, there is no other public interest law firm as uniquely qualified to fight this battle. But we need your prayers and financial support to succeed. Please consider a tax-deductible donation to support our critical fight for your faith and freedom. Visit us at www.AmericanFreedomLawCenter.org.
If you don't know where Bill Bennett stands, here are some of his beliefs.
I believe Americans should largely do much more for themselves than many Americans are doing.
But do I rule out government as something that might be able to assist in that? And that I do not.
I do think families, churches, and schools are better places for that to happen. People should do for themselves what they can. Government should do what people cannot do for themselves.
Get to know Bill Bennett, weekday mornings from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New Choice, Intelligent Talk.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back. We're joined, I'm very pleased to say, by Mark Schneider. Dr. Schneider is a man that I had the privilege of serving in the Pentagon with many years ago. He has gone on in the interval to perform enormously important service to our country and both the Defense Department and other agencies. Truly one of the country's preeminent authorities on matters of nuclear forces, specifically threats to this country from nuclear powers, and also issues involving compliance that some of those states have engaged in, violations of treaties, and nobody understands the ins and outs of all of this better than Dr. Mark Schneider. Mark, it's great to have you back with us. Welcome back.
Well, thank you very much for that very kind introduction.
Well, it's entirely warranted. One of the things I'd like to get through with you quickly is what Russia is up to at the moment. Describe, if you would, Mark, broadly, the approach that the Russians are taking to nuclear forces and questions that have arisen about its compliance as a result with various treaty commitments to us.
The Russians are very extensively modernizing their nuclear forces. They're introducing new types of ICBMs and SLBMs. They plan to completely modernize their ICBM and SLBM force by 2021.
That's the land-based ballistic missile force and the sea-based long-range ballistic missile force, right?
Yes, that's exactly correct. They are basically ignoring treaties. The number of treaty violations over the last couple of decades is simply enormous. And in no area is the impact greater right now than in the INF treaty, where now even the Obama administration has acknowledged that their cruise missile testing program appears inconsistent with the INF treaty. And I think that's a considerable understatement.
Yeah, this is just another part of the reset gone bad. Our guest is Mark Schneider, a longtime civil servant, one of the most distinguished I've had the privilege of working with, the senior member of the Senior Executive Service for many years in the Pentagon and elsewhere under successive administrations. Mark, you were talking a little bit about how the reset is not really panning out with respect to Russian compliance with the Intermediate Range Nuclear Force Treaty and a number of others as well. Is it fair to say that what we're witnessing really is a program of modernization of their nuclear forces, offensive nuclear capabilities that is being pursued both comprehensively, of course, but also with really no regard at all for treaty obligations where they might find themselves conflicting with them?
Exactly correct. We have many Russian violations, including most of them actually relate directly to Putin, that are basically creating capabilities that are not supposed to exist under the arms control obligations. And in the case of the INF treaty, there are five outstanding Russian issues of compliance that are being discussed in the Russian press right now, the most significant one being the cruise missile issue, which the Obama administration admits appears to be inconsistent with the INF treaty. When you put all these together, it looks like the treaty is effectively going away as any constraint on what the Russians are doing in terms of a missile strike capability against Europe and even against the Chinese.
Well, you will recall, Mark, back in the day when we worked together in the Pentagon, this was one of my concerns, having helped with your considerable assistance in the negotiation of the treaty. My conclusion was that it was unverifiable and likely to prove to be really problematic in precisely this way. Mark, let me turn to the Chinese. You've just mentioned that they may also be putting into the field intermediate range nuclear forces capabilities. Of course, they weren't party to the treaty, but talk more generally, if you would, about the nuclear program of China, including this so-called underground Great Wall capability?
Well, they have a very extensive missile modernization program. It's actually, even the Obama administration says it's the most aggressive modernization program in the world today. It involves both strategic nuclear systems, land and sea-based a full ICBM range, ballistic missiles, and medium and intermediate range nuclear capable. missiles. Now, the underground Great Wall is very interesting because of the fact, I mean, according to the Chinese, this is 5,000 kilometers of missile tunnels. Now, you don't buy 5,000, you don't dig, in effect, 5,000 kilometers of ballistic missile tunnels, you know, to handle a tiny force of ICBMs. This suggests to me that they plan to deploy a literally massive capability.
And it would be, of course, concealed from us, and hence questions about the accuracy of the estimate that we've been routinely given by this administration and previous ones, that they only have a few hundred warheads, maybe off by, well, who knows, I guess a factor of 10 or more, perhaps.
That's certainly within the range of possibility, but irrespective of how many they've got now, everybody admits their capability is going to grow. The only question is how much and how much Mirving, multiple warheads, they will actually do.
This is, of course, a country that has made no secret of its willingness to consider attacks against this country. In fact, not so long ago, they were actually putting into their press the execution of a planned attack on the western part of the United States would cost millions of deaths, as indeed it would. Mark Schneider, again, is our guest, a longtime professional in the nuclear weapons arena, one of the country's preeminent authorities on matters involving treaty compliance, as well as the gravity of the threat we're facing in these various regards and others. Let me very quickly turn, Mark, if I can, to a contrasting picture of what we're doing in our own country with respect to nuclear force modernization or enhancement in other ways of our nuclear deterrent. Is there anything happening on that score?
Very, very little. I mean, we have a notional commitment on the part of the Obama administration to maintain the nuclear triad. But in terms of real programs that are under contract or actively funded, you have very, very little that's actually going on. If you believe what they say, take it at face value, it won't be until the very late 2020s that we get anything that's new. And I'm very suspicious of the reality of some of the programs they've announced for that period of time.
And Mark, in this regard, just your thoughts, to what extent do you think what's going on here is a function of the president's determination, notwithstanding those notional commitments, as you say, including to the United States Senate as the price for getting the new START treaty adopted, that his preoccupation is with ridding the world of nuclear weapons, starting with ours, not with ensuring the future effectiveness of our deterrent, especially in the face of these growing threats?
I think his personal attitudes toward nuclear weapons is really the most important driving factor in administration policy. And as you state, it's a very bad policy that is significantly reducing our deterrent capability at a time when we face a resurgent Putin. Just annexed the Crimea and appears to be setting the stage for a second invasion of eastern Ukraine. And then in the Far East, you've got real problems with the Chinese and their efforts to effectively annex the South China and East China Sea, including islands the Japanese own.
And many other aspirants for the opportunity to challenge us or perhaps even attack us as well. Mark Schneider, thank you for your insights and your really extraordinary corporate memory on all of this and for helping the rest of us both make sense of what's happening today and remember the lessons of history. Keep up the great work, my friend, that you do at the National Institute for Public Policy, where you are a senior analyst. Come back to us again very soon. Next up, we'll talk with Diana West about American Betrayal 2.0 right after this.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
If you don't know where Bill Bennett stands, here are some of his beliefs.
I believe Americans should largely do much more for themselves than many Americans are doing.
But do I rule out government as something that might be able to assist in that? And that I do not.
I do think families, churches, and schools are better places for that to happen. People should do for themselves what they can. Government should do what people cannot do for themselves.
Get to know Bill Bennett, weekday mornings from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New Choice, Intelligent Talk.
Hugh Hewitt keeps the Constitution first.
That's what the left is about right now. Not about this or that.
Regulation or restriction.
Not about keeping weapons out of the hands of the mentally disabled. It's about attacking the Constitution. And by the way, you cannot mess with the Second Amendment without messing with the First and the Fourth and the Fifth and the Tenth. You either respect the Constitution or you don't.
The Hugh Hewitt Show, weeknights at 6, after Michael Medved at 3, on 1260 WRC. New Choice, intelligent talk.
This is Jenny Thomas. I do video interviews of leaders with the Daily Caller. I had the privilege recently of interviewing Diana West about her extraordinary new book, American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. You can see it at dailycaller.com. American Betrayal reads like a spellbinding historical thriller, but it is also a carefully documented account of how the U.S. government was penetrated by communist agents in the years after President Roosevelt normalized relations with the Soviet Union. Diana West shows how a similar assault is being mounted today by yet another collectivist ideology, the supremacist Islamic doctrine of Sharia. She establishes that while the communists and the Islamists may have very different visions of the world, they have employed the same techniques to defeat America. Please watch my conversation with Diana West about American Betrayal, then check out the other great leaders we profile at dailycaller.com.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Michael Rubin is a brilliant scholar who recently published a most timely book entitled Dancing with the Devil, The Perils of Engaging Rogue Regimes. It warns that negotiations with those who are hostile to everything we hold dear is not just unproductive, it's usually counterproductive. They generally have the effect of legitimating enemies of freedom, buying them the time and latitude to further endanger it and us. Dr. Rubin's warnings come to mind as diplomats from the U.S., European Union, and Ukraine sit down with Russia's foreign minister today in Geneva. This meeting will likely begin a process that's used to justify postponing Western penalties for the Kremlin's ongoing aggression against Ukraine. And that, of course, will have the effect of encouraging more Russian aggression, not preventing it. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish uncovers the dark side of revolution in the Middle East and the reason why Muslim countries are unable to dig themselves out of a cycle of revolution, political unrest, and tyranny. The constitutions of many Muslim countries state that Sharia law supersedes all other law, and that is why it has failed in providing a legal and political system where healthy democracy can flourish. In this dynamic, only tyrannical governments can survive. In The Devil We Don't Know, human rights activist and Center for Security Policy fellow Noni Darwish answers the tough questions. Why the Arab Spring won't usher in freedom and democracy or a feminist movement. And how Israel will be threatened by the new wave of Islamism after the so-called Arab Spring. The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish. It's available at Amazon.com.
An inspector general serves as an independent watchdog in each federal agency, promoting integrity and efficiency while rooting out fraud, waste, and abuse of authority in our government. Several important U.S. agencies have not had an IG for years, including the State Department, which has been without an IG for 5 years. During a constant wave of scandals in Washington, D.C., the newly published IG handbook couldn't be more timely. Every IG takes an oath to support and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. By exposing fraud, waste, or abuse through audits, IGs satisfy the constitutional mandate that a regular statement and account of the receipts and expenditures of all public money shall be published from time to time. The new IG handbook explains by what authority and for what purpose an inspector general does what he or she does on behalf of we, the people. Find the Inspector General Handbook by yours truly, Joseph E. Schmitz, on Amazon.com.
Hi, this is Frank Affney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
Now more with Frank Affney.
Welcome back. We're joined by Diana West, the nationally syndicated columnist and best-selling author and all-around fabulous, insightful pundit, who is our guest each week, I'm very pleased to say. Diana has written most recently an extraordinary book entitled American Betrayal. And Diana, first of all, welcome. Good to have you with us, as always.
Thank you, Frank.
And second of all, I wanted to just say, I'm wondering whether you might draw the conclusion that we're in the midst of an American betrayal 2.0, a sort of contemporary counterpart to the accommodations, some would say the selling out of the country to the communists, now with the Islamists. And I want to go through a couple of examples of what's going on here, whether it's the government or whether it's the academic institutions or the media or what have you. We really seem to be giving a pass to our enemies. Let's start with the silencing of Ayaan Hirsi Ali by Brandeis University, for example. What did you make of that episode?
Yes, well, I would first of all agree with you that we are certainly in 2.0, if not 3 or 4 or 5.0, and indeed that was sort of the premise of the research I did that went into American Betrayal to try to shed light on the kind of precedent we actually and very tragically have for this sort of sellout based on lies. And when we look at Brandeis and what they've done in terms of disinviting Hirsi Ali from a visit there to receive an honor, we are looking at the institutionalization of these lies, because what they are rejecting are the truths that Hirsi Ali has told about the Islamic roots of repression against women, against freedom of conscience, against freedom of speech. I mean, these were the discussions and the writings that Hirsi Ali brought out when she came under eternal death threat for having made a film in Holland about the Islamic roots of the suppression of women, the repression and violence against women, indeed, that led to the assassination of Theo van Gogh, her colleague.
Yeah, and she has had firsthand horrific experience with this kind of brutal repression
and physical experience,
mutilation and all the rest of it. This was a dark moment for a liberal academic institution that professes to uphold the standards of academic freedom, but it's not the only example that we can think of, Diana. I'm struck by what seems to be a kind of Trotsky-like wiping out in the renderings of what happened a year ago this week up in Boston in terms of explaining the motivations of the perpetrators of the terrible attack on the Marathon by the Tsarnaev brothers. Talk a little bit about that and their connection to a radical mosque up there in Cambridge that had a lot apparently to do with inculcating in them this sort of jihadism they acted upon.
Yes, well, it's very important to bring that up, because this is actually all of a piece. It is all part of the attempt to completely cut away, to deracinate, really, the violence from the Islamic roots, whether it's Hirsi Ali speaking out at Brandeis, which is now considered hate speech. In other words, speaking the truth, seeking honesty about Islam is now hate speech. And then similarly, as we see the narrative created to completely cut off the Tsarnaev brothers' motivations for their onslaught against the peace and security of Boston in their attacks on the Marathon, again, from Islamic roots, from the kinds of proselytizing that would go on in that particular mosque of, that we know for sure has these connections to jihadist goals and aims, and has been a sort of vortex of these same organizations. It's part of what we're seeing everywhere, however, and this is what concerns me, because looking back historically, we see the same sorts of cutting off of logical conclusions about communism, about Islam. And this would extend even to things that we support in terms of showcasing violence against Islamic women in the recent movie Honor Diaries, which again does not make the link to Sharia, to the Islamic laws and traditions that actually inspire and sanctify these types of behavior. So it's all happening all around us everywhere we look. Very hard to keep up with.
Well, it is. And one of the most distressing of these manifestations, Dinah West, has been the announcement this week, at the very moment that the dots were there to be connected between a radical mosque, the Islamic Society of Boston in Cambridge, and jihadism, an act of terror in the name of advancing Sharia, defending Muslims against infidels and so on. The New York Police Department, under Mayor Bill de Blasio and his newly appointed, reappointed really, Commissioner of Police William Bratton, has taken offline a unit of the NYPD that had surveillance of
mosques and Muslim communities as part of their portfolio. Is this evidence, again, of the willful blindness or worse that is leaving us vulnerable, in your judgment, a kind of American betrayal to more of this kind of jihadism from these guys in the future?
Yes, I think it actually advances us, takes us past willful blindness. I think this essentially runs up a white flag. This is just pure, unadulterated submission.
Which is the object of the exercise, as far as the Islamists are concerned.
Indeed, it's the meaning of the word Islam. But it's actually a real sea change, especially in New York City. As we keep marking these year anniversaries after 9/11. But, you know, as we get farther away from it, we are coming more and more into this orbit where we will just absolutely, completely convince ourselves it had nothing to do with Islam whatsoever. And this is a big step in that direction. The pieces are coming together. This is where we're going. And at this point, I do not see any pushback. As bleak as that sounds, I do not see pushback.
Big step. And as you've chronicled in your superb book, American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character, Diana West, it's that kind of accommodation, it's that kind of big lie, really, that compounds the danger that we're facing at our own hands. Lastly, in this vein, Diana, there is an initiative that is underway at the moment by some of the most prominent Muslim Brotherhood front groups in the United States, specifically the Islamic Society of North America, the Council on American Islamic Relations, the Muslim Public Affairs Council, to espouse and promote and presumably install, not just in New York City, but across the country, something they call the Safe Spaces Initiative. And since many of these groups are very deeply tied into the Obama administration, the Holder Justice Department, the Department of Homeland Security, the White House itself, I fear that there's a bit of a wired game quality to this. But the Safe Spaces Initiative, in the words of Salam al-Mariati, the founder and president of one of these groups, the Muslim Public Affairs Council, would have as its purpose ensuring that, quote, government informants, unquote, are not allowed to penetrate the sacred space, the safe space, if you will, of the mosques. What are your thoughts on the advisability of that idea?
Well, from a security standpoint, it's absurd. But I would hope, actually, that there would be some kind of freedom of religion challenge to this, or equal rights for all religions challenge to this. Because if mosques get a safe space, then I think every house of worship can get safe spaces. And you know, this becomes an absolutely appalling state of affairs if this is permitted to go forward. But again,
the trouble is, of course, that I don't know of any churches or synagogues or houses of worship or Hindus or Baha'is or anybody else in which seditious, violent plots are being cooked up.
You
know, there is a tradition of this going back to Muhammad in the mosques.
Absolutely. At least it would give us all NSA free zones. I mean, this is getting the surveillance issue is getting insane. And if they are accorded some kind of special treatment, is what I'm trying to say, we are once again seeing an instance where Islam is being treated as a superior creed, as something that gets special treatment.
And very, very worrying.
The root of, you know, so many of these issues, so many of these threats.
Diana, my concern, of course, is that we don't want to have mosques given a surveillance-free zone under any circumstances. Not all of them are problematic, of course, but some clearly are, particularly those that are owned and operated by an outfit like the North American Islamic Trust, which is an unindicted co-conspirator in the Holy Land Foundation trial and Muslim Brotherhood front funded by the Saudis. Seriously, bad business. Diana, we have to let it go at that. Thank you very much for joining us. It's always great to talk with you. And we will be talking next with Bill Roggio about the status of the long war, and it may bear on what's happening in Ukraine as well, straight ahead.
Listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
There's a reason Bill Bennett doesn't go after people that disagree with him.
I don't think you persuade people when you yell at them,
when you make fun of them,
when you wave your finger and scold them. I don't think you turn anybody around.
And I think the reason that you try to adopt the Socratic maxims of
candor, intelligence, and goodwill
is because people can change their minds.
They're not going to change their minds if you call them idiots.
I just don't think so.
Bill Bennett's Morning in America. Weekday mornings from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New choice. Intelligent talk.
This is Frank Gaffney. Something is seriously wrong when the FBI interviews a jihadist like Tamerlan Tsarnaev, the older of the two Chechens believed to have perpetrated the bombing of the Boston Marathon, and sees no evil. Yet, that is the predictable result of the shackling of the Bureau that has taken place in recent years. For example, in 2011, the Obama administration actually purged FBI training materials of information that warns of the connection between the Tsarnaev's kind of religious fervor and terrifying acts of jihad. And Team Obama has also effectively told the Bureau it must get the approval of Muslim Brotherhood operatives before it can do any such training in the future. This is a formula for much more jihad in America. It's time to free the FBI so that they can do their job and protect our country. If you agree, go to www.freethefbi.com. That's www.freethefbi.com.
Hey, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
Ready to roll?
Go for it.
Hi, I'm Jessie Jane Duff. I'm a retired United States Marine Corps Gunnery Sergeant, and I served 20 years on active duty serving this great country. I'm with Concerned Veterans for America now. After I got off active duty, I realized I still wanted to be involved and help change the direction our country is going. Concerned Veterans for America offered me that great opportunity. If you want to get involved, and you're thinking of getting involved, please visit our website because we have many activities throughout the nation. We have wonderful representatives in each state who are putting forward different ways you can become engaged. So go to the website at concernedveteransforamerica.org, and you do not have to be a veteran. But if you support the freedoms that we all fought so hard for to defend this great nation, then consider participating in the many activities we are participating in and helping to change the direction our country is going.
Hugh Hewitt keeps the Constitution first.
That's what the left is about right now. Not about this or that.
Regulation or restriction.
Not about keeping weapons out of the hands of the mentally disabled. It's about attacking the Constitution. And by the way, you cannot mess with the Second Amendment without messing with the First and the Fourth and the Fifth and the Tenth. You either respect the Constitution or you don't.
The Hugh Hewitt Show. Weeknights at 6 after Michael Medved at 3 on 1260 WRC. New choice. Intelligent talk.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We're joined by Bill Roggio, the man we turn to with regularity to help us understand what is going on in what he calls the Long War. He is, of course, the managing editor of the Long War Journal. He is also a senior fellow with the Foundation for Defense of Democracies. You can find his writings and superb work at his resource, longwarjournal.org. Bill, welcome back. It's always good to have you with us.
Pleasure's mine, Frank. It's always a pleasure to be here.
I'd like to talk with you a little bit about what you think the Russians are doing, not so much in terms of their grand strategy, but how they're playing their hand in Ukraine at the moment. You're deeply familiar from your embeds with American forces and, of course, your service in uniform as well with how well special operations and the like perform. Is that what the Russians are doing at the moment to foment instability and pretext for intervention in eastern Ukraine?
Absolutely, Frank. And I think you hit right on it. This is a special operation backed by the heavy military power of the Russian armed forces. So what you have on the Russian side of the border of the eastern Ukraine, the Russian military is massed there. So they're posed, they're ominous threat and with armored formations and infantry and airborne troops. But Russians claim their own military activities there. That's convenient. And then across the border in several Russian-speaking cities and regions in the Ukraine, they have these so-called militias, well-organized militias, organized, and all of a sudden, all at once, popping up in these cities and taking over police stations and government buildings and clashing with Ukrainian forces. We saw this playbook in the Crimea, and the Russians are following, are taking this large and conducting. It's a complex special operations mission. They're not claiming that they're Russian forces, but we all know what we see. You're seeing well-armed, well-organized troops operating under command, taking commands from leaders, hitting key logistical and security checkpoints and nodes in order to take control. And they seize several Russian or Ukrainian armored vehicles and are humiliating the Ukrainian forces who are, are not as a professional military as the Russians.
Well, not only that, but another piece of the operation, it seems, that goes on back, well, for years, apparently, has been the hollowing out of the Ukrainian military so as to ensure that there would really be no resistance when ultimately this part of the play begin to eventuate. Bill, let me switch gears with you. One of the things that the Obama administration feels is still possible, despite the increasing difficulties with the Russians over Ukraine, is cooperation with the Russians in places like Iran and Syria. And staying with Syria for a moment, what in fact, in your estimation, is going on with respect to the Russians' client, Bashar Assad, and his promised elimination of all chemical weapons? Are we really seeing much in the way of cooperation from either the Kremlin or Bashar Assad on that front?
To ascertain whether Assad, given the level of the civil war within the country, how much of his failure to turn over the chemical weapons is related to just absolute logistical and security problems that are ongoing throughout the country, and how much this is stalling by the Assad regime because they don't believe that the United States and the West are going to follow up on threats for use of force in case he fails to do so. I think that, when you look at how Syria or countries like Iran are operating when conducting negotiations and agreeing to terms dictated by the UN and other organizations, what they're going to do is just delay and delay and delay and, claim we have a problem here and just keep doing it because they know there's no enforcement mechanism.
And in fact, we're now seeing the use of chemical weapons apparently being resumed. It's a little unclear by whom exactly, but presumably this is something we're going to confront increasingly on the ground there as this effort to remove these chemical weapons falters or simply collapses. Bill, let me ask you again. Our guest is Bill Roggio. He is the managing editor of the Long War Journal, formerly United States Army combat veteran. He is also a man who has been tracking assiduously developments in what he calls the Long War, and you can find more about it at longwarjournal.org. Let me ask you about a conversation that I had with former Army General Jack Keane, a man I must say I regard very highly, and yet I think I've got a disagreement with him on this, and I'd like to figure out where you are on it. He was persuaded in a conversation we had earlier in the week about the confidence that he has that there are moderate elements, in fact, large numbers of moderate elements inside Syria who are now carrying the brunt of the fight, he says, against Bashar Assad, and who are determined to resist the efforts of those Islamists, whether it's of the al-Nusra Front or the ISIS elements, who clearly have a very different vision he says, for the future of Syria than the kind of secular, more or less democratic one. These guys, he would have us arm and train and otherwise support, perhaps even with military attacks. Give me a sanity check on this, if you would, Bill. Knowing the forces in play there, as you do you agree or disagree?
I absolutely disagree, and for several points here. First, name names. Name me the names of these groups that are fighting the Nusra Front, that are fighting the Chechen-led jihadist groups that are packed with foreigners. Just please, name me the names. Most of these so-called secular groups fight alongside and receive aid and support. And the head of the Syrian Revolutionaries Front, which used to be the Free Syrian Army, I guess, that the group has changed so much over the last several years because it's a hot mess. The head of it said, we have no problem with the Nusra Front. And as a matter of fact, we have and we will continue to provide weapons to them. I'm paraphrasing him, but that's exactly what he said just several weeks ago.
There's even been something of swearing of loyalty, I think, to the Nusra Front by many of these folks. He mentioned, in fairness, he mentioned the name of a colonel, and I confess I can't recall it right this minute, but he did come up with one name and seemed to feel that that he had lots of support in opposing these guys. And I did ask him about this idea of swearing loyalty, and we didn't quite get to closure on that. But I'm not sure whether I'm heartened or whether I'm discomfited by the fact that you concur. It's probably not the case that we've got people that we can usefully and safely support. Talk, if you would, Bill, about another piece that's your colleague Tom Jocelyn at the Lone War Journal has today about, or I guess earlier this week now, the al-Nusra Front's relationship with what was formerly another al-Qaeda element, so-called ISIS.
Yeah, the Islamic State of Iraq and the Sham was originally al-Qaeda in Iraq. It tried to expand into Syria. Well, actually, it did. It created the Nusra Front, but then it tried to basically subsume the Nusra Front under it, create an Islamic State. And it basically wanted to just make itself the dominant jihadist force in Syria. And the Nusra Front, which is Al-Qaeda's official affiliate in Syria, and it's backed by Al-Qaeda General Command, they've had a dispute over this, a leadership a dispute, and ISIS is fighting Nusra and other rebel groups in certain areas. This is probably where people like, you know, Jack Keane are saying, oh, look, they're willing to fight Al-Qaeda. They're probably talking about ISIS, right? But that's a dispute that I suspect will be hashed out one way or another over time because, you know, they're both jihadist groups. This is a problem of excess. They have enough jihadists and jihadist groups that they have the luxury of fighting over territory in Syria. That's what's being missed here. Not that they've fractured or whatever. They have enough. They have the luxury to fight over territory because these groups are big enough to do so.
Bill Rogier, we have to let you go. Thank you so much for joining us and for your contributions each week. Keep up the great work at the Long War Journal, and we'll look forward to talking to you again next week. I hope the rest of you will join us again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Affney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.